Since we're talking about choirs and bands, I want to ask you something else. Several years ago, Jim Ripley, the department chair at Carthage and director of the bands there, invited me along on the band's 125th anniversary tour to a solo in the Copland Old American Song. It was so much fun. One of the most intriguing things about it was I just couldn't believe how different band tour was from choir tour. In that my recollection of choir tour, I enjoyed it at the time when I was a student, but those couple of years I was responsible for the Carthage Choir, I remember choir tour being kind of complicated and emotions kind of running high and friendships and romances and soap operas and all kinds of stuff behind the scenes. And when I was along on this band tour, I just felt like bands are just put together differently, and you just kind of show up and you play the music and you have a good time, and then you climb on the bus, you go to the next place, and there just seemed like kind of a simplicity and directness to it. It felt like a whole different animal to me. I wonder, in all the years that you led both choirs and bands, if you agree at all that there is kind of a different dynamic sometimes at work in bands versus choirs, or not so much?
Absolutely, Greg. Absolutely. And it's not easy sometimes to verbalize it. But first of all, in choral, if you don't feel well, headache or whatever, you don't sing well. Mm. But you can still play C. You know?
Can still blow into your clarinet.
Still blow into your horn. That's exactly right. So there's that one fundamental thing. And then the choirs, people get more emotional and so forth because they have a common text and they're trying to find the individual emotion in every single piece. Mm. Well, if you're doing that, then music is going to spell out in social relationships as well. Mm. And the band is a little bit more objective, although I worked very hard with them through imagination. And you've got four parts in a choir, and in a band you've got, gee whiz, what, 12, 15 different parts that are have to become part of a whole.
And yeah, like cogs in a machine.
Yeah.
Right.
It has to fit in.
Yeah, it's almost like a member of a band knows exactly who they are and what they are in that framework, and if you're just one of the eight first sopranos, you kind of worry and wonder, am I fitting in here? Do I matter here?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you're the only oboe or just two oboes, you know, it's different. Yeah. It's a different animal. Mm. It really is.
When I saw you as I was a youngster growing up and in those years in the 60s when my mother became your first secretary at Luther, you still had the band. At what point did you let go of conducting the Luther band, and why, if that's not too personal a question?
Yeah, I never let go of the Luther band, and I never gave up the Luther band. It was an administrative decision that practice teachers, instead of only going out for a period of weeks, had to go out for a whole semester. And if the practice teachers had to go out for a whole semester, then the choir couldn't tour at the end of the first semester, and the band tour band people then would tour over spring break. Well, I couldn't be two people, and if the band people were going to tour then in the second semester, that meant they had to do their practice teaching first semester. Well, that was not good for the band. Or vice versa with the choir. So it was a very complex decision based on staffing, needs of what the new person might bring in, and so on and so forth, and then the rest is history.
Was that hard to, I mean, on a personal level, was that tough to give up?
Oh, because the night before we were going to leave on tour was when I had to make the decision.
Oh, wow.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. That was not it. That was a long table prayer that night.
I bet. Well, of course, in the intervening years, of course, many, many tremendous years with the Luther Nordic Choir, and other choruses too. As a freshman, I sang in your oratorio chorus, and I always thought that was kind of intriguing that that you would have that experience of standing in front of the premier choir on campus, of course. But then you would also have this other ensemble with a lot of freshmen and maybe other upperclassmen, not quite so gifted or whatever, and you really managed to achieve similar magic moments. And I suppose that's part of the reality of your career, is making magic with whoever you're standing in front of.
And we automatically adjust to whatever level that magic is going to be by what you know the talent that's in front of you. And so it's amazing, isn't it? When you go to concerts, you adjust to the expectations the minute you understand realities.
Yeah, like if I go to my wife's elementary Christmas concert,
yeah.
I'm not expecting the Mormon Tabernacle.
No.
I'm expecting just...
But you can be tickled to death, can't you?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Hadn't thought about that. That's an interesting image. Over the years, you have, in addition to your work at Luther with the Nordic Choir, you also did so much work as a clinician all over the country, in which you would step in and step in front of essentially a room full of strangers and work for them, work with them for a fairly brief amount of time, and then it's time to put on a concert. You were especially good at that, and it's not a particularly common gift to have. What do you think it is about you as a conductor, as a musician, that made you so such a good match for those kind of situations?
Where did you dream up these questions?
Well, I've been thinking a lot of these for
yeah.
a long time.
Well, you know, the answer is going to be a little deceiving, maybe. If you are not willing to be vulnerable, in other words, to be open and to be free to express how you feel and who you are, any teacher has to be vulnerable. They have to open themselves up to the student. And if you don't have that, and then in that vulnerability, when they see that, if you can find as quickly as possible that magic moment, oh, hey, this is going to be pretty good, you know, and their eyes kind of open up a little bit and they sit up a little bit straighter. And I said, now see what your potential is. This can be an exceptional group. And if you can get that as fast as you possibly can, then they're pretty much with you.
Mm.
Then you see, if the rehearsal is going along and I point to somebody and I'll say, you look like Greg Berg. Boy, you're impressing me the way you're singing. I can't hear you, but I can see you. Now, Greg, will you please come up front and sing for the choir? Why, the choir gets as still as mice, and Greg breaks into a cold sweat and sings. But that's individuation then.
Right.
You make people feel important.
Sure. Well, and it's so funny how the other people sitting there feel like it's
yeah.
happening to them too, or oh,
yeah.
it could happen to me next.
Yeah.
And the way that engages your level of attention and focus,
yeah.
it's incredible.
Oh, boy, I hope that I'm not next. I hope I'm not next. Then once in a while, they'll come into the department secretary, and they'll say, Luther, they'll say, doesn't Mr. Noble have confidence in me? How come he never asked me? But it takes
yeah.
a while to get there.
Right, yeah. It starts to become a badge of honor to be brought up front and singled out.